Good afternoon and welcome to another episode of And Then There's That, a bi-weekly podcast of people, politics, and punditry in Howard County on the HOCO Mojo Network. I'm Paul Scalney, and I'm here at Clyde's in Columbia with my co-host, Dennis Lane. Joining us today is Howard County Executive Ken Ullman. But as always, we first like to take a look at some of the news making the headlines this week. Dennis, what do you have to get us started?
Well, you know, the it's been in the news a little bit lately. The Howard County Police have been clamping down, I guess, on people who abuse their handicapped parking privileges. And you know, lo and behold,
one of their own get busted.
you got to love this. And yeah, I got mixed feelings about this.
I don't have to love it.
I kind of feel for the police chief. I'm sure when he saw that picture in the barriers, he's like, geez. You know? And what I'm referring to, of course, is at the, I believe, the Barnes & Noble bookstore in Ellicott City. A police officer was responding to, I guess the actual shoplifter or the proposed perpetrator had left the premises, and the officer was going there to simply make a report. And that's a busy bookstore, so I know that parking lot is usually pretty busy. He parked in the handicap space in front of the store, and some intrepid photographer for the...
Actually, I think he worked at Barnes & Noble, came out and saw him pull up, and he came back out, so I'm going to take a picture of this.
Took a picture of the police car in the parking space.
Well, and I got mixed feelings about it. I mean, the Howard County Police Force does such a great job, and obviously coming in to handle a reported theft, it's not that big a deal, and, you know, he shouldn't have been there, but...
You know, he probably forgot I'm going to be in for a few minutes, but, you know, again, it's one of those things, it just doesn't look good.
But, you know, it's funny, this week, obviously, the new law went into effect with cell phones, and I'm driving down Little Patuxent the other day, and I look to the left as I'm speeding by a cop, and he's sitting there on his phone. I'm thinking, wait a minute.
Well, you know what, but when I read this and the resulting kind of uproar, all I could think is, well, we're not as bad as Prince George's County, where I guess 34 of the police officers were caught cheating on the test, and you know what? They're not going to do anything about it. Nah, that's okay.
So we got a good group. So the Clarksville priest and the funeral home debate is back.
The priest and the funeral home. Love them.
You know, we've talked about the story before. Where better a place to put a funeral home than next to a church?
Next to a church.
I mean, why is this such a big deal? So, of course, we're referring to the story that there's a funeral home that's looking to set up shop next to the St. Louis Church
in Clarksville.
Right. And they're having a hard time with it.
They need a zoning change, I think.
Conditional use.
Yeah,
so
conditional
before use. The hearing examiner.
Right. So, but, you know, what's funny is on one side you've got the Protestants. So, we don't have a problem with it. The Catholics, however, they got a problem with it.
And they're the ones that are a problem with most things, right?
I
can say that.
Yeah, I'm a fallen Catholic myself, so I'm speaking from good background here. But you know, with the latest piece is now the priests are saying, well, you know, we're taxpayers too,
and this is our residence. We live here.
We live here.
It's a big, big church, but we live there.
Ken, does the church pay taxes on that property like a regular residence? No, we're getting the shake of the head. No,
well, this is the time we need to remind the county executive that the listeners can't see his head nodding.
There's not a camera.
No,
I thought we were on TV
on
News Channel 8 simulcast or something.
But
I actually did a radio show on WTOP and didn't realize till afterwards that we were on News Channel 8 at the same time, and so I saw my facial expressions on TV afterwards.
Yeah, you got to be careful. You know what? I saw one on Kojo Nandi where you were also. Yeah, there's a YouTube.
There they told me that was okay. So my facial expressions there, I have no excuse.
Well, you know, actually, a local blogger, Tom Cole, who's actually going to be our guest in a couple weeks, brought up. You know, they have a preferred. The funeral home actually has a preferred site across the street, and you know, he's saying, can't we figure out somehow to work this out? So, you know,
well, the issue there is across the street has water and sewer, and the other side of 108 doesn't. So, the church got a conditional use to have the church there, and then the church got water and sewer because there's a provision for religious institutions that are across the border of the metropolitan district. So, you know, the hearing examiner's taken it all into consideration, and I'm assuming they'll make a wise decision.
I think she's continued the hearing for a fifth night now towards the end of October.
Right, so. Right, right. So the saga of the priest and the funeral home continues.
Stay tuned.
Stay tuned.
Last night, Howard County Board of Ed voted to acquire the 20-plus acres for a school site in Elkridge.
Now, they acquired. They were giving them.
Well, that plus $4 million,
they voted
right?
To accept it.
Yeah.
We'll take it. Twist our arms. We'll take it.
A generous offer of over $10 million.
Please don't make us do it.
Yeah, okay.
I don't think most people have to take a vote to accept $10 million. But, you know, I'm glad they...
And I love the criticism of it. The people that are up in arms about this are saying, well, there's got to be a better site for a school in Elkridge. Well, you know,
Guess what? There ain't a lot of land left in Howard County.
Being in the commercial real estate business and looking for land in Howard County, it ain't easy to find 20 acres, plus within a particularly defined area like Elk Ridge.
Well, and Alan Dyer saying, keeping true to his personality, of course, was the rebel in the crowd, and suggesting that it's too close to a railroad track.
A railroad track.
And of course, you've heard me kick and scream about this. My kids can't run on the blacktop during recess, so you know why should we be able to put a school 800 feet from a railroad track.
Right. You know, 800 feet. It's up the hill. It's separated by a buffer of trees.
They also said that the school system's working on different designs that'll get it 1,300 feet away.
And actually, one of the other sites that that some of the residents in that area want them to consider is the pet cemetery site, you know, which I love it. Okay, you know, kids, we're away from the railroad tracks, but the school's on top of, you know, Buffy and Fluffy.
Fluffy's ghost is coming to third grade. I can just see it now.
Well, anyway, on that note.
Well, Ken, thank you again for coming out today and joining us. We're actually celebrating our almost one-year anniversary now. We've had nearly 25,000 downloads of the show. We thank all our listeners for supporting us and appreciate them being open-minded to this venue of getting news.
Yeah. Congratulations on almost making it a year.
One more show and we're there. Ken, I've spoken with other elected officials and on the local level and both the state level, and I think I've heard frustration amongst elected officials that people don't know who their elected officials are. I think you being the county executive is probably not the case as much as county council. But for the benefit of the listeners that don't know a lot about you individually, tell us about Ken.
You know, I was fortunate enough to be born and raised here. My folks from Baltimore, and they bought into the Jim Rouse vision of a great community based on the values of acceptance, diversity, and opportunity. They moved out here in the early 70s, and, you know, I was one of the first babies born at Howard County General. Got a great upbringing here.
You were one of the first babies born at Howard County General. Really?
I was. Vic says I'm definitely within the top 100, but he can't find the records to pinpoint exactly which one I am.
Does that concern you that his records are...
you know,
never mind, don't
if the records today were in that shape, but maybe they are. Just to tell you, it was such a country hospital back then that we had one little thing that went wrong. Like I turned a different color, they put me in an ambulance and took me to Johns Hopkins and didn't let my mom go. And now, of course, the hospital is owned by Hopkins and has a neonatal NICU and all these great things. But you know, I really feel strongly about the place, raising my kids here, and you know, just feel real fortunate, humble to have had the opportunity to be a county executive for 4 years, and love the chance to do it for another 4 years. And we really have a great thing going here, and so. Really proud of our record, and but again, you know, there's lots of places. I say all the time, there's lots of places that used to be safe, used to have good schools, and so, you know, what are we doing to make sure that 10, 20, 30, 40 years from now, the county executive can still say those same things? So,
we're working on. Before we move on from you know, kind of your background, I mean, you're a dad. You know, you grew up here, and one of the things the other night with the fundraiser in my neighborhood, you mentioned that. You got the countdown sheet on the fridge with the kids.
Oh, yeah. My kids are very into this election. Jackie and the kids put up a whiteboard on our fridge, I think 100 days out or 90 days out.
25 days now, right?
Yes.
So that's sort of like an advent calendar. They like open up a little door every day and get like little chocolates because, you know, daddy's got 24 days to go.
They actually go into the campaign office virtually every day. Maddie says she has to go to work. She's my 9-year-old. And Lily, I think, just entertains the campaign staff. But they literally put signs together. She's doing data entry. She's calling her friends, asking them if their parents will put a yard sign in their lawn.
Wow. Does that violate labor laws? Oh, it's volunteer. Never mind.
Yes. I don't know. Maybe the allowance I give her is might be investigated. But no. So, you know, it's just been a great process, and I'm real fortunate. But, you know, I do like the fact that when I'm able to go out, when I go out and talk to kids, you know, I went to Phelps Luck Elementary, Dunlog and Centennial, went to College Park, went to Georgetown Law School, came back here, practiced law, and saw an opening where somebody retired from the county council. I didn't know she was going to endorse her best friend, and I'd barely win that race by 36 votes in the primary. But
rest is history.
Of course, who knew that I would work so hard to get reelected this
and
just
now
a few
she's
weeks
one of your
ago.
Best friends, right?
So to the kids listening, never burn bridges.
Actually, there's an interesting story, too. As I recall, you and I sat in this restaurant a little over 4 years ago, and I said, so are you going to run for county executive? And you said no, and that was when everybody thought that Guy Gazzone.
It's no, state secret. Guy's one of my good friends, and sort of everyone was assuming that he was going to run, and right. I was getting ready to run for re-election, and then he decided for a variety of family reasons not to do it, and, I said,
you stepped up to
the plate. Let's do it, and everyone said, well, I don't know. Too young, this and that, and so I don't know. I got the gray hair to prove it now. So
funny what 4 years does, isn't it?
Absolutely. So here we are.
So Ken, a poll came out this week, which is I think a little surprising
really?
To a lot of people. Yeah, I
really?
Suspect you've seen it. So. Of course, referring to the poll that shows
sure.
you're leading your opponent Trent Kittleman 49-41%. First, let me just get your reaction to the poll.
First of all, the only poll that matters is the one on November 2nd. And I would tell you that poll is dramatically different than all the research that we've done on the race and sort of our team has done. We've been consistently up by a much more significant margin. But with that said, polling is all about a scientific, guesstimate, if you will, about who's going to turn out on Election Day. And clearly, if all of one party shows up and the other party stays home, then
it's all about the numbers.
Yeah. So, I think the one thing that we took out of that was those would be historic numbers. It would be historically by far the worst turnout for the Democrats in Howard County history. And still up by 8 points. So,
right.
It's different. But with that said, I don't want to diminish it. We're out there working hard every day. We take nothing for granted, and that's the way I do everything. Like, we're 10 points down and working hard. And
a couple of things were interesting. You did very well with the independents, even in the positive side, but Paul was pointing out earlier, and that what many people have pointed out is that these polls are done on landline telephones. And I think that there's some statistics out that some large percentage of the people under 35 don't even have a landline in their home.
And that's true. I mean, but I would say about the poll, the specific difference is just the ratio of Democrats Republicans in the poll. I mean, just to be specific, right. It's like when the Washington Post poll came out that showed Governor O'Malley up by 11 points, and the other camp, came back and said, wait a second, that's using 06 numbers.
Right.
And if you have a 1994, if you will, when it was a great Republican year, you have an 06, 08 when it was a great Democratic year. That's the spectrum of people really energized on one side or the other. What I would point out is that the poll that just came out used numbers that were much worse than 1994 actual numbers. And we're still, most Democrats around the country would be thrilled to be up by 8. So,
right.
but I would tell you, our numbers have been, dramatically different. But with that, we don't take anything for granted.
So what was actually more interesting to me was not so much the 49-41 as much as some of the things that Dennis was just talking about. The independents, you had 48-28, which was interesting. A lot of people have said,
how can you be up 48-28 with independents but only be up 8?
Exactly.
So,
so that was interesting. And the other thing I thought was interesting, Democrats are only undecided 2.8% and Republicans 14.4%. Which was kind of interesting that the Democrats kind of know what they're going to be doing, and the Republicans are still sort of out there, can't quite figure out what to do. So
that's kind of surprising. Democrats know what they're doing, don't you think? That
not Howard County Democrats. Washington Democrats, maybe, but not Howard County ones. Savvy group,
yeah. Speaking on kind of larger issues, there was a story in the Washington Post this week that made me chuckle. There's a town in Tennessee that there was a fire, and the fire occurred just outside the city limits to a guy's house, and it was a township. It wasn't a major city. The fire department goes out to put the fire out, but as they arrive at the house, they realize this house hasn't paid their $75 fire protection fee. They're outside of the city limits, and they got hit with this fee, and so they let the house burn. All I can imagine is the guy going, "Can I pay you now?"
A check.
and the reason why this story caught my attention is because over in Montgomery County, there's a big issue about ambulance fees, and the county council in Montgomery County passed a law to allow the county to charge a fee for every ambulance call. And of course, the larger story, and how bring this back to Howard County, is that there was a petition to put this up to referendum. Typical of what's happened to referendums in Maryland lately is that got thrown out because of signature issues, and now the Maryland Court of Appeals has overturned that decision and is putting that on the referendum ballot. Well, everybody in Howard County is going, what does that mean to the Turf Valley? What does that mean to the town center petitions? Care to comment on that at all?
We would put out any fire that took place in the county. Next question. Now, I will say, just back to that point, it was interesting. We have not gone down that road of putting in a fee. We've thought about it, and we've, you know.
What is the thinking behind that? Why do we need
Here's what the thinking is, very specifically. The thinking is that the insurance companies will pay it if the person has insurance. So many jurisdictions see it as easy money. You know, Prince George's has it, Anne Arundel has it. In fact, Baltimore County either has it or Baltimore City, one of the two. So we're actually one of the few that doesn't have it. The issue is that we would charge it, but we wouldn't force people to pay it if they didn't have insurance. So, for example, it would be, you know, insurance company, based on your insurance, will pay, it's either 80 or 90%, depending on what you have, of the fee. So if we tacked on $500, it'd be $400-something that would come from the insurance company who's willing to pay it. And if you didn't have insurance, we just wouldn't try to collect. But with that said, I've bought into the argument which says, you know, why even put that barrier out there? And that's why we haven't gone down that road. Mm-hmm. But I think it's less punitive than folks make it out to be.
Well, I can imagine the insurance companies don't like it.
The insurance companies don't like it. The volunteer companies are concerned, many of them, that it's a disincentive. It also, there's some discussion of what it does to fundraising. Mm-hmm. If people feel like they had to pay for the service, well, then why do I contribute to my volunteer company to come? So there's a lot of politics involved, and we've made a decision not to do it. But it's something that in tough budget times, you know, you take a look at. But that is the issue. A citizen would never actually pay it. Right. Now, I shouldn't say that because obviously your premiums and everything gets paid. But if you have coverage that says it, it's some people think it's like leaving money on the table.
Will Healthy Howard cover that?
We do, actually. No, well, Healthy Howard actually has a relationship with Shock Trauma. And so we have actually a free transport if you need to go to Baltimore, to Hopkins, or Maryland through Shock Trauma because they're a partner with Healthy Howard. But the part of your question was about the referendum.
Yeah, about the referendum.
And, you know, that's a specific case, a specific decision based on that case. We haven't even seen the opinion yet as to what it was based on. But I do think you raise a good question. I mean, this, you know, there's a double-edged sword. Look, if you have too low of a threshold of signatures, then you can take anything to referendum. And, I think that can be an abuse of the issue.
We're a republic. We elect our elected officials to make decisions on our behalf.
Always bought into that argument. I actually voted at one point to raise the threshold. I believe we voted from 5,000 to 10,000. It was a charter recommendation. What it says is it's 5% of the – no, I think what we did is we just removed the 5,000 cap.
Right.
Because I think our charter says, to correct me, it's 5% of the registered voters or 5,000, whatever is lower.
Right.
And it really ought to be a percentage of the population.
Sure. So, I mean, it's the same charter
that's been in place
in the 1960s.
Right, yeah. 1960s.
It hasn't been changed. So, but I do think that there's a good point to make that, you know, it's pretty onerous to have somebody have to put their exact name as it is. But, on the voting ballot. But to me, the whole referendum issue anticipates, I think, is that people are so angry at their government. Their government has done something so outrageous that they're lining up to sign up because they want to overthrow this law in the worst way, and they can't even wait to throw these people out who passed this law. As opposed to being chased down the aisle of a grocery store, to sign something.
Right.
You know, people sometimes, sign something to have somebody leave them alone.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Ken, you mentioned, Dennis mentioned Healthy Howard. What is the future of Healthy Howard, not only from the perspective of how national health care law changes, how are they going to impact Healthy Howard and what you see on the horizon for Healthy Howard as a program?
The good thing is, and there's two parts to Healthy Howard. One is the Healthy Howard Access Plan, which provides affordable access to care for uninsured. That gets more of the attention. There's also Healthy Howard Umbrella, which is healthy restaurants, healthy workplaces, healthy schools. And we have competitions among schools and workplaces. Actually, we had a big event just a couple mornings ago with workplaces. But the Healthy Howard Access Plan will be put out of business by the National Health Care Plan by 2014. So the good thing is, and I'm the happiest person around, that we're out of business, because I wish we never had to step into this, but I felt strongly that the federal government, because they hadn't done anything, that there were so many people in our community, and I thought in Howard County, you know, we ought to be able to make progress on this issue. And I'm glad that we've been able to get thousands of people care by receiving their sort of interest in applications and then referring them to things that they were qualified for is a thing, frankly, I'm very proud of. And the other is just about 1,000 people. Actually, we had a forum the other day at the Realtors, and I came down afterwards, and a woman pulled me aside and introduced herself and said, "I just want you to know I'm in Healthy Howard, and thank you as a realtor. You know, I don't know where I would have been able to get coverage. I can't afford individual policy." And, you know, that, frankly, that is one thing that's always troubled me about our system, is that your coverage is based on who you work for. I think it's sort of anti-entrepreneurial.
Well, it's the only form of insurance. I mean, we don't have car insurance or life insurance or any kind of insurance through our
workplace.
Right.
And I think it's sort of anti-entrepreneurial, frankly, to have somebody tied to a government job or a big company when they want to go start their own, but they're worried about it. But with that said, so in 2014, when there'll be a mandate that everyone have coverage. And so we'll phase out over the next 2 to 3 years into that. And I think many of those people will be phased into things that become options before that. So one way or another, we're out of business, which is great. Healthy Howard's out of business. What Dr. Bielenson has been looking at is the federal health care, the one area that survived of sort of the public option, if you will, was nonprofit co-ops. And what the bill provided was $6 billion, it might be seven, I think it's $6 billion of startup money to basically be reserves for startup nonprofit co-op insurance companies.
Okay.
And so what Peter's looking at is, and the Board of Healthy Howard, in talking to other jurisdictions around, as to whether or not this model would be one that would morph into one of the first co-ops. And we haven't made a decision. The board hasn't made a decision on that, but they're looking at it now. One thing will happen. We'll either be out of business or it'll morph into a co-op, which will have has to be totally self-sustaining.
And this co-op would be in conjunction with other counties and jurisdictions?
It has to be.
Yeah.
So Peter's already had conversations in Baltimore City, Baltimore County, Anne Arundel, just to see if there's an interest. And so far, there's an interest in exploring it.
Well, you guys have already, you've established that you can create these coalitions because you're a broadband initiative. I mean, that's a great segue into what you guys have done with broadband. And my one comment I made to somebody today, I learned a lot more about it the other night when you were speaking in our neighborhood. What fascinates me, and what I think is often overlooked, in what Ira Levy was able to accomplish on your behalf, was that you got all Maryland counties, to work together. This has got to be one of the most diverse states.
Well, here's what happened: the elected officials in those counties didn't know that he was doing that. So all the I want me to walk through sort of this broadband initiative is through the stimulus funding. There was $7 billion, maybe that's where I got the seven, all these billions, that was made available for broadband build-out for underserved and rural communities. So we didn't think we could qualify in Howard County, but Ira Levy, our CIO, went to all the other CIOs in the region. And so we created a consortium of Harford County, Baltimore City, Anne Arundel, City of Annapolis, Prince George's, Montgomery, Carroll, and Frederick, and Howard County. And for those jurisdictions together, we formed this broadband consortium. We then went after the dollars to connect over 1,000 anchor institutions with a really robust system. We realized that there's over 2,600 miles of publicly owned fiber in the ground, either owned by the state or local jurisdictions, but none of it connects to each other. And so by laying another 1,200, we'll be able to create this really robust, we're calling a public sector cloud, which for those sort of understanding cloud computing, will basically mean that we can control our own voice over IP. We'll save millions of dollars sort of getting out of phone bills, essentially. We can consolidate data centers. So, for example, the school system wanted to build their own data center. Well, we convinced them to use ours, but it'll mean you can co-locate these data centers because now you've got this robust system connecting. So if our 911 center went down, for example, we could snap our fingers and Baltimore County Dispatch could answer, Howard County Dispatch, how can I help you? You know,
those and the user would never notice a difference.
Never notice a difference. Right. It wouldn't miss a beat because it all connects, it all links. And then we're laying a second conduit for the private sector. So folks will be able to lease dark fiber from the consortium at discounted prices and have 10 gigabytes of bandwidth. I mean, we think it's really going to...
Does this compete with Verizon then and Comcast? To a certain degree, yeah.
This might be my nodding my head without the, without the camera as well. No, I don't think it does directly, but I think there may be some commercial customers that are interested in this bandwidth.
Ken, as a Howard County resident, I got kids in the school, in our school system. Obviously, I'm thrilled about this.
Yeah.
How do you, as an elected official, balance? I mean, Maryland is such a fortunate state. Howard County is one of the most fortunate counties within Maryland. There's so many places around the world that need these dollars more than we do. The hills of Tennessee or whatever, people that have no connectivity at all. Where does your allegiance as an elected official in Maryland start and stop vis-a-vis sort of the bigger picture of the country and its needs?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think what we pointed out in this application specifically was, look, we have areas in every one of those jurisdictions that are less fortunate and don't have access. I mean, you know, Fios isn't even in Baltimore City yet. So, you know, there are areas that have not been connected. But I really think that, you know, just specifically on stimulus, for example, my feeling about the stimulus plan has been, look, what if this doesn't work? It doesn't stimulate the economy. It doesn't help. What are we left with? At the end of the day here, at least we're left with a system that can help create jobs for the next, you know, number of decades. And so, look, we know that there are many more less fortunate, but we also know that Howard County and Central Maryland and Maryland and just the whole Baltimore-Washington corridor has to be one of those places that leads the country, leads the world. You know, people talk about it being the next Silicon Valley. We can do this. The jobs that are coming to Fort Meade around cybersecurity, the cyber command, coupled with APL and Hopkins on biotech around 270 corridor, we have all this here. But how do we create this culture of entrepreneurism and innovation that really allows the next Google, the next Apple to sort of emanate from this region? And I think that's one that, you know, Maryland can do a better job of creating this culture of entrepreneurism and not just relying on all these federal dollars that are spent in the region, take it to another level. I actually led a trip, the Economic Alliance of Greater Baltimore, to Austin, Texas, where we met with folks from UT, the venture capital community, the private sector, chip makers, others, to talk about sort of what they've done, because they've done a lot of things right there. And it's interesting. What they've done is create more connections and more of a venture capital sort of community than I think we have here. We're making progress, but I think we need to be one of those places that leads the world, and this kind of infrastructure will help us get there. But my allegiance is to Howard County.
Well, one more question along those lines. Yeah. You talked about stimulus dollars. Whose responsibility is it to not get our federal government further into debt? And I guess where I go with this is
ours.
Ours collectively, right, as a society. Yeah. So this program becomes available. The federal government really doesn't have the money to be spending on it yet. We obviously want to avail ourselves of it because it's out there. And if we don't get it, someone else is going to get it. And so how do you find that balance?
Well, and that's a good point, and that's absolutely true. And that's part of why we went after it. But the other reason is that at the end of the day, you know, this country built a national highway system. Pretty good investment. You know, be able to move goods and services and people, you know, goods and right. people throughout the region. This is what we need to be able to compete in the next generation, in the next, you know, the future with the Chinas. And so, you know, I think we had an opportunity where our country was in tough shape and the economy was in tough shape. I wished more of it was spent on actual infrastructure, you know, roads and bridges and tunnels and water systems.
Shovel-ready projects.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of it wasn't. And, you know, they had to get votes in Washington. And, you know, I think, you know, the economy's been stabilized. But certainly, you know, I mean, look at what we've done in Howard County. I mean, we're AAA bond rated. And so, you know, you balance those things. But what I liked about this broadband specifically was this is the kind of infrastructure in the ground that I do believe, one, save taxpayers millions of dollars, and two, create jobs, you know, moving forward. We've already had companies that want to be able to do discounted broadband, high-speed broadband into neighborhoods because they recognize they can piggyback off this infrastructure and have points at elementary schools. Once you're at an elementary school, you're into almost every residential neighborhood. And so we really think that there's going to be sort of a wave of innovation that stems from having this in the ground. And
with
so,
long-term savings. Yeah.
Long-term savings and job creation.
I mean, a
company's going to want to locate here because of that. I mean, it's not going to be the only matter. But when you look at every jurisdiction where you can put a company
factor.
In, you say, huh, I can go here. They got good schools. They got good quality of life. They're safe. And they got this high-speed broadband I can
plug
into.
And more importantly, it's future generations. I mean, you're laying the groundwork. I mean, this has a long-range benefit for the county. And that kind of leads me to one of my other topics for discussion with you today, Belmont.
Yeah.
When you talk about future generations, you know, Belmont is certainly a gem in the county. And the college recently announced that they're going to close down their operation. It's been for sale since, I guess, beginning of the year.
You're not going to move there? I thought you were going to put in an offer and make it your house.
Actually, we were going to make
the county executive mansion.
Gracie Mansion.
We were going to make it the studios for, and then there's that. But
I think they're vacant right now.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Belmont's a tough one. You know, it's really the road. It's the limitations of that current road that's shared with the neighbors there, and. Based on that limitation, unless something breaks differently with those neighbors, it's going to be tough for it to be operated in a way that really generates the revenue to keep it going. So we're really in a tough spot.
Are there alternative routes into the property? Can you a way to pull another road in there some other way?
Well, I think when it was first purchased, there was a thought to do that. So there's an easement, but it goes through DNR property and some other property out to Landing Road. And I think that's problematic
very tough property.
Another reason. I mean, a lot of trees, a lot of environmental features, and then out to Landing Road where, you know, I think folks there feel like there's already a lot of traffic on Landing Road or Rockburn Park and all that stuff. So it's a tough one. We're going to sit down with the folks in the neighborhood who I, you know, talk to on a regular basis and talk to the college, and, you know, we'll find out. It's been on the market, and if there's not an appropriate price paid in the near future, we'll roll up our sleeves and figure out what to do with it. We're certainly not going to let it crumble. It's a gem, but you know, we've got to really figure out a solution moving forward.
I'd like to see something done with that. That's a great spot.
So Ken, we're getting our high sign here from our producer, but before we let you go, can you give us some election predictions, both maybe this year, if you're willing to go out on that limb, or not?
Sure.
County executive, who do you think's got that?
I'm optimistic.
In Howard County.
I would be humbled and honored to serve as your county executive.
Okay, you got to vote. Next.
I feel very strongly that the four Democrats on the county council will be reelected. Very, very strongly. Everything I'm seeing in those races is very positive. What else you want to know?
So you don't think Dr. Beams is a
I said four Democrats in the council. I'm not commenting on that race.
All right. Fair enough.
What did you call her? Something else?
Dr. Moonbeams.
Yeah, that's right.
You read that.
I saw that, yes.
All right. How about looking out 5 years? Where's Mr. County Executive 5 years from now?
Oh, gosh. Ask me that question in 26 days because, we're working very hard and, want to be reelected.
Right, and I appreciate the focus on reelection, but let's assume you already made the prediction. You're coming back, and I think that's a fair conclusion.
Did I make that prediction? I just said I would be humbled and honored. No, I don't think I made that. I don't want to go too crazy.
That must have been the nod. Okay. All right, well, Ken, listen, we do appreciate you coming by today. Thank you. We wish you luck in November.
Thank you.
And look forward to having you back.
Thanks for having the show. Yeah, thanks for having me on.
You got it. Thank you.
Okay, we're joined now by John McCoy, the real McCoy, who is Columbia Association's new watershed manager. Actually, first.
Yes, that'd be correct. First watershed.
First
manager.
Ever.
And you know what? Watershed's kind of big news with CA these days with the dredging and the town center redevelopment and all that going on. What can you tell us? What are you tackling right now?
Well, I think first thing I'd do is I'd tell you in truth, it's not new news for them. They've had an ecologist for a very long time, worked with open space. They understand that, somewhere around 20-25% of the land here in Columbia is managed by Columbia Association. Yeah. So
most of the stream beds, actually.
And, originally the design of the town did a pretty good job of preserving stream beds. So we have pretty good riparian forest. What I'm doing is actually implementing the plan that Columbia Association staff, their consultant Versar, and the Watershed Advisory Committee, which is a group of very dedicated volunteer residents, have put together and approved last year, which is a very comprehensive management plan for doing two things, retrofitting through capital projects, stormwater management practices, and then reaching out to the residents and implementing a residential landscaping management program oriented towards dealing with stormwater.
Particularly for those people who back up to a stream bed.
Everybody. I think one of the things that really needs to be emphasized is there is a collective responsibility, and everybody really has something to do with stormwater.
So you often hear of Columbia residents, oh, God, here we go again, another covenant, another obligation, or another something I can do or can't do. Walk us through, what does this mean to the average Columbia citizen from this landscape?
Well, what we're interested in is every citizen has a piece of a driveway, has a piece of a roof that has runoff coming off it. Right. And we are interested...
Impervious surface,
very good. We are interested...
It's very impressive, guys.
I surprise myself sometimes.
For those listeners that don't know what impervious means, call Dennis after the show.
We're interested in working with residents so that they're treating that runoff that comes off that impervious surface from each and every property.
In what way would you treat like it?
Well, rain gardens, lawn management, whether it's a reduction in grassed areas, conversion to ground cover and mulched areas. If you have lawns, question would be, well, how often do you fertilize? Or are you using soil tests to drive your fertilizing? Do you actually need fertilizer? And if you are fertilizing, are you paying attention to what kind of fertilizer you're using? I went over to Southern States today and bought a bag of no-pea fertilizer that I'm going to use as a demo on Sunday at Climate Action Day, where if I go out, I take a soil test, and soil test comes back, and the recommendation is, well, I need to put a little nitrogen on my grass. I don't need any phosphorus. Then I've got a fertilizer that'll do that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, paying attention to the products you're using.
Right. Talk to us about the dredging that's taking place right now, starting right here in Lake Itamakundi, and that's been taking place in some of the other lakes around town.
Yeah, it's been going on since last year in Elkhorn, started here in Kittamaquundi, and is scheduled to start in Wild Lake at some point. Twofold. The lakes are interesting features here in town. They were actually originally built as sediment control ponds. Plus, you know, it's an amenity. It's an attraction.
I understand, so you wouldn't be able to build them this way anymore.
Probably not Wild Lake, probably not Elkhorn. You know, Kittamaquundi is really a dugout. Now, you probably couldn't dig it out in a floodplain anymore, but you can build dugout ponds in the state.
Okay.
And so what's happened over time, and I would have to say that, you know, the lake's been around 30, 40 years, and we haven't done a whole lot of maintenance to them. So they filled in.
Right.
And as they filled in, you get nutrient-rich sediment. It does two things. You lose your volume, so the lakes get warmer during the summer, and you get a lot of nutrient-rich material in there, which you get this nitrogen and phosphorus cycling, and as you can tell, you know, we have a lot of aquatic growth.
Right.
We've got a lot of weeds. Rooted aquatics in them. We have duckweed in Elkhorn. We do have some algae. Wild Lake in particular has a very good standing crop of phytoplankton. So as we dredge them out, one, we're creating capacity to store sediment in the future. We're getting the lakes a little deeper. We're removing this nutrient-rich material, and the plan is that it will help reduce some of our nuisance weed problems.
All right. Well, we appreciate you coming by today and sharing a little bit about it. I mean, it's a topic of everybody's been talking about. So,
what are they doing on the lake?
Right. But it's nice to see that we've got somebody that's is focused on that. And hopefully we'll have you back sometime to tell you about. You can tell us about some of the progress you've made.
I'd love to come back.
Sounds great. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
That about wraps up yet another episode of And Then There's That. On behalf of myself and my co-host, Paul Scalney, we'd like to thank our producer, Dave Bittner, for making us look good on radio, and to Paul Kraft and Clyde's Restaurant for hosting our show again today. We'll be back again on October 22nd with special guest Ira Levy, Howard County's technology czar. Ira put together the state coalition that successfully won a multi-million-dollar federal broadband grant that, when completed, will make Maryland the most wired state in the union. We hope you'll join us.